I don't think I can hear it yourself.
Your pastor.
Yay, it works.
Have the agenda on it. And our staff people that helps out. Derek, who maintains the cable internet connections that we get out from Comcast and Wave, just had a baby this day.
Did everyone have a chance to grab a copy of the agenda and the position statements we'll be talking about tonight?
Oh, yeah, so Sarah's got the low-income internet position in there.
We have the
privacy principles for people. Also, wire for the record initiative.
Great, we're going to go ahead and call this meeting, the March meeting of the CTAB, to order. And we'll start with first, welcome everyone here. We have a very packed agenda tonight, so we'll be rolling through things. If we can go around and give introductions, my name is Narisha, I'm the chair of CTAB.
Dave Keyes, Community Technology Manager and Liaison to CTAB. And the person who turns on the lights when you say that.
Cass Magnuski, I'm here to take minutes.
Dana Lewis, CTAB member.
Beryl Fernandez, CTAB.
Sarah Trowbridge, CTAB member.
Jose Vasquez, CTAB member.
Ben Krokauer, CTAB member.
John Gianverso, Acting Director, Digital Engagement.
Michael Matt Miller, City CTO.
Hey.
Hi, John Madaba, Philippine Community of Seattle.
I'm Ryan Diablo, working in the Office of Policy and Innovation.
I'm Chris Lona, CL Design.
This was DeWitt, Open Data Manager.
Hi, Janice Duffy, Living Community.
Yeah,
I'm Humphrey from Internal Information Professional Service, non-profit organization based in Lake City.
Dash Obama Jarvis.
EJ Martinez, Peter Sanda.
And some of Seattle,
here we
have some other stuff.
Armando Stetner.
Little Woman, Mayor's Office.
Doreen Cornwell.
Kiwi Wong with Chinese Innovation and Center.
Kate Schneier with Peter Soundoff and Getting Gates.
John Walton with the Seattle Privacy Coalition.
Philip Ball, Mayor's Office.
Awesome. Good everyone.
David Robinson, Seattle Privacy Coalition.
All right, welcome everyone. Like I said, we have a very packed agenda, but tonight we're going to start hearing from our mayor. So with that, I will turn it over to Mayor Murray.
Thank you. Well, thanks for having me here. You know, when I was young in 1988, I was appointed to a commission by then Mayor Royer, and at that point, the mayor saw every commission once a year, but there were about 20 commissions, and that were at about 75. So I apologize that you're not going to see me every year, but I do want to spend time with you because I, as someone who started out public service in the city as a member of the city commission, I know exactly how important your work is. I also know how much time you'll spend give to us, give to the city, give to the people of Seattle. So I want to thank everybody for that. I want to thank you all for the work that you have done with us. And actually, there's been so much. I have a list because I couldn't remember it all. The guidance that you provided for the cable franchise community needs assessment. The guidance that you provided for the recommendation for the 23 technology matching fund grants. Hosting the public forums with Christopher Mitchell to learn more about municipal broadband models and the things that we should consider. Encouraging us to address city privacy policies. And as you know, the council has recently passed legislation that we sent down as based on your recommendations. Assisted us in changing the SDOT director's rule, which is expanding broadband. You did it. We did it. It's happening. doing more to address the issues of equity in the digital world. And I guess I should mention one of our accomplishments was hiring a chief technology officer, Michael Mattman, as well as the broadband study that we're doing in developing a strategy, including looking at a public option. It's my understanding that will be available in April. And as you know, we launched a pretty high-tech version of how we can track outcomes and data in the city through performance.seattle.gov. And Ryan Diava from my office is heading up that effort. Those are just some of the things that we've worked with you on, just some of the things that we want to work on and work with you on. So as we move forward, I look forward to more. That's a lot for 1 year. And I wanted to not give you a big speech. Instead, I'd rather have a dialogue, take questions or hear comments from all of you.
Okay. So we will open it up. Does anyone on the board have any questions for me?
This will be the easiest group of my life.
Well, I guess I have one. It's a question. I'm relatively new to the board. You know, I joined this year, and I've been getting involved with the technology matching fund grant process. And the work that we do with all the community organizations, I'm wondering, is there more that we can do from the city's perspective to connect the resources that are available, you know, by to collaborate with these small nonprofit or community organizations or projects? Because I believe that there's a lot that we can do to leverage, you know, like the Get Online programs, the job searching, accessing to resources. But I don't know if we already have a mechanism in place to share that wealth of resources with all these community organizations that are doing great work in the community. And the reason I say this is because these communities are reaching the most unrepresented populations. So what are your thoughts?
So I think that we both do, and we could do more. That's a short answer. You may know, for instance, we built out last year and expanded the Office of Immigration and Refugee Affairs. And as a result of that, we also connected them and connected the communities they serve through technology with the resources that the city has developed around interpreters or small businesses and other things that we're doing. The same is true, you know, to use another department. There are 28 different departments, SDOT, and information is putting online and making available to technology, and again, connecting with those communities. Pre-K, our pre-K program through our new Department of Education has reached out to communities that will directly be involved, and again, using technology. Can we do more? Absolutely. And I know that you all have plans, not just through Do It, but through the Seattle Channel and other efforts that we can use.
Oh, Farrell. One of the issues that comes up, not only for us, but in the introduction of new technology anywhere, is how it is going to impact the more vulnerable segments of our population. And in doing so, and I think everyone wants to do the right thing, and we all aim in that direction, I think it helps a lot to also have a diverse workforce that can help with that bridge. And I've heard you talk about your emphasis there in diversity and inclusion, and it's a long-standing priority for the city of Seattle. One of the things I'm hearing now, especially from large corporations, private corporations, is the distinction between diversity and inclusion. So you can have a diverse workforce but not include them, or not include them in a way that actually makes a difference. And I wonder what specific steps you can give, what encouragement you can give to those of us who've been in this town for decades, literally. I go back to the days of Cal Anderson. I was on council staff with him. To hear the same thing over and over again and yet not see real tangible evidence of it on the ground. And I know you're well intentioned, no question, I have no question about that. What specific steps can we take, and how can we help you in that direction?
Sure. First of all, I think that it has to start with leadership. And we have dramatically changed the makeup of the cabinet of the department heads. It is far more racially diverse and gender balanced than it was 14 months ago. We've done that in the mayor's office as well. You've got to lead by example, and when you have opportunities, you need to take those opportunities. One of the things that we will work harder on, some departments, as you know, in the city are much better than other departments. When it comes to diversity, some are actually as diverse, in some cases even more diverse than the city. Others are completely lacking in it. I visited a nameless office today where it was almost entirely white. It kind of caught me off guard. I visited another office where the two-thirds of the employees in that office in the city were people of color. So there's you know, different things going on here. We're going to hold ourselves. We're trying to get a better understanding of who makes up the city and where we need to target it. For instance, I asked a question, how do we know the number of East African city employees? We know that there's only one East African police officer that was hired last February. And we don't actually have that information. So we've got to get better. So basically what I'm telling you is it's not just a matter of promises, it's actually collecting data to show whether we're moving or not, to actually put that data online to show where we stand in comparison to the city. That's the thing I can promise. When it comes to the private sector, which you mentioned, you know, the technology world is really both diverse and not diverse. In some ways, you're attracting more people from more countries than Seattle's ever seen before. In other ways, when it comes to gender, I sat with one of our big IT companies about a year ago. There were 16 executives in there. There were no women in the room. We can, you know, we can't legally force them, but we sure can show them a model and encourage them to hire differently. The private sector is more difficult given the laws of the state.
Okay. Anyone on the outer ring? Questions for the mayor?
Yeah, it's similar with her, but.
Can you tell us your name?
Asaye. My name is Asaye Abuni. I'm a Multimedia Arts Training Institute and Executive Director, and also a program producer for Ethiopian News Media TV program, mm-hmm. Which is 3 times a week on Comcast Channel 77. And my question is actually related with that. Thank you for the appointment that you made since you've been actually mayor. We see so many things. We are located in 27 Jackson. We have a studio, also a media center where young people come, learn more about journalism, documentary, also the current technology actually we teach them so they can be leaders, future leaders. And as Seattle is a digital technology world, you know, where Microsoft, all these, you know, technology companies are here, I think using this kind of technology, as you can see, the increase of diversity and multicultural in the southern part of Seattle, where 9118 is located, there are so many different ethnic communities, and in the meantime, there are so many issues. And creating opportunities for these communities to have one kind of voice instead of different, you know, issues, different organizations, I think would be a better idea to bring them together so we can have a voice. That's why we are heading, actually. We do forums, discussions, panel discussions, and we have a number of issues, especially for the last 2-3 years, I think. HIV/AIDS is one of the topics in East African spiritual community. HIV/AIDS is the number one in Ethiopian community and second in Kenya. And also youth violence. What we are trying to do is, as a SCAN television program, as we have a discussion last week, especially coordinating and making a conversation within these communities will give power or one voice if they use this television program. So, you know, it makes sense that for local government to find solutions or to respond what's going on in their community. What is your what is your ideas bringing this community so they can have panel discussions, conversations about issues, so they can have one kind of, you know, question for the government?
Well, if we're talking about technology, we made a significant investment in the budget that particularly through the Seattle Channel and other technology to reach out to emerging communities, new communities, immigrant communities, diverse communities, and start using the city's capacity in giving people a voice. I don't know if you want to talk more about this here.
Sure. And John, I'm going to interrupt you.
Sure.
Okay. So we have been having the conversation in the city. We recognize that when we transitioned to the Seattle community media model, it left a gap from what people had the opportunity to leverage, understand, and having live studio airtime. And we've actually had a number of meetings within the city over the past several weeks to understand what are the opportunities that we can provide to resume a similar service in a way that is meeting the needs of the community and also is within the resources we have today under our new model. And so, John, I think that we're getting close to some quotes.
Right. Yes, help is on the way.
Yes. So we'll be briefing the mayor on very shortly some ways that we can move forward. We do thank the Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs, who we've been working closely with, to understand you know, the best ways to serve community members and reaching out to some community members for validation of the ideas and the path forward. So very shortly, we'll have some opportunities to share.
Many of the ideas that surfaced in our meeting last Friday are going forward. I've been talking to Seattle Community Media, and we're developing some options that I think are right in line with that conversation that we had.
Yeah, how do you connect these organizations, or, you know, which they have a forum so they can they can have live programming?
Right.
For example, we have the capability where we can do live programming directly connected with Seattle Community Media. How could you create this kind of technology for us? That was a question.
Well, it is in place. It's a question of providing more access and more availability. But I think I can't promise it right now, but one of the options that is still on the table is live dial-in access from Seattle Community Media. Some other ideas, we talked about MMRTI also providing live streaming. So coming to you pretty soon will be kind of a list of options and opportunities that will increase access for your communities.
Hi, so looking at the Seattle Comprehensive Plan, I'm really excited to see community top of the list. So thinking about particularly this environment and technology and the 20-year plan, you know, I mentioned sustainability here, but I'm also wondering, what do you think are some of the more exciting or innovative ways where Seattle can show some real leadership in the next 20 years, as opposed to the in terms of sustainability, but also leadership and innovation?
Mm-hmm. You want to talk about some of
Yes. It's a great question. You know, we are a high-tech city. We're a city that is going to grow by 120,000 people in the next 20 years. And we know that 75% of those new residents are coming here for jobs related to the high-tech industry. So we have a population that expects high-tech from their government, and we need to be in a position to deliver. I know you've heard me talk about some of the things we're working on that will help us be more connected to public here in city government, that will help us enable a more productive city workforce that's better serving the city, and ultimately making Seattle a leader in digital equity. So just a few of the things that we're working on in that regard. Number one, we do have a redesign of Seattle.gov coming forward this summer that we're working towards that will make it a much more interactive site, make it a much more valuable tool for the public. I'm also very excited. I know Ryan in the mayor's office is thinking about digital engagement from a tooling perspective. So what are those technologies to help give the public a greater voice into their government in a more timely manner? Some of the other things that we're working on, broadband has been very top of mind for this group, and I do thank everyone for your hard work, both in the broadband subcommittee, as well as everyone who's been very active in thinking about how is it we can live up to the mayor's directive that everyone in the city have equal, affordable, and competitive broadband options that approach gigabit standard, and we have some time later for an update on that front. We also, I know, are getting an update today on the Digital Equity Initiative. So how is it that when we bring together our community organizations, when we bring together our corporations that are fueling our population growth, that we can have a conversation around what every member of our community should be able to do with technology, where are we today, and how do we put strategies in place to get us to that desired end state? That's a really exciting conversation. It's a conversation that we are, you know, in a leadership position, not only in our region, but in our nation right now, in trying to drive these efforts. And so I'm very excited to see that unfold, and CTAP is going to be a key partner in helping us get there this spring. There's a few of the things that we're thinking about to make us that technology innovative leader.
Yeah, so this is my last year on the board, and I've had the honor of sitting on the Technology Matching Fund subcommittee, which helps award grants or makes recommendations to award grants. And it's been a fantastic experience. And this last year, there was a bump up of $150,000 for, I think it came from some federal funds. I would love to see those funds become permanent on some level. And in addition, I'd also love to see if there was some way to partner with private companies to help fund the amazing work that David Keyes' team has been doing. Is there any, and this is maybe to both of you, any creative ways we could bring in people to help make that at least the $150,000 permanent, if not greater, to fund those grants?
So we can continue to pursue additional federal money. And we certainly can explore our growing relationships with the private sector, which we're kind of lag behind as a city compared to even some of our local companies and their relationships with other cities. So I think that's an area that you rightly point out that I think there's capacity there. The part you're going to hear me hesitate about is, you know, the city is doing fine as far as coming out of the recession, but the city's actually going to go through a period of cutting because we're not doing as great. As revenue has never returned to it was pre-recession levels. And so while we grow, we're not growing at that same level, and we are looking at some marginal cuts over the next several years. So while we will do ads, and this could be an area, you're going to hear a big caution from me on that until either Tim Eyman's 1% cap on our tax authority on property is lifted, or some other revenue source is made available to us.
Any more questions?
I have one.
Okay.
We all know that innovation is key, especially in technology. My experience has been that side effect of innovation is a resistance to change. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that. Maybe that's too vague a question, but I think that it's important to recognize that any time innovation happens, it requires change, and sometimes that's difficult. So I'm wondering if there's any change management in place, or
well, you know, I like to say that Seattle's the most conservative liberal place in America. We're very liberal, but we don't like to change either. And when you're dealing with the public sector, it can be difficult. But I think if you are able, and we're trying to do both through different approaches about leadership throughout the city, the type of programs you're developing, if you show individuals that they'll actually benefit from it, that they'll be a better employee, they'll have more marketable skills, and work with them and not just sort of scare them, I think you can make that change happen. Obviously, some of the things that are happening before people end up in jobs is really important. Doing the coding thing out at Garfield High School with the kids, I'd never written code until a few months ago. We did it using that movie, The Frozen Princess, or whatever it is.
That's part of that.
So, you know, those kids were excited, and they're going to be far more adaptable. I think it's a mix of things.
Just want to remind everyone to say their name before they make their statement.
Janice Peffy, a local community member, and I appreciate the mayor and the guy over here bringing up the fact about inclusion and gender equity, because I work in the same building as Facebook, and I've been up there, and you're right, it is the most diverse workforce I've ever seen, but it was easily 20, 30 men to every woman. And another group that I haven't heard mentioned is senior citizens. And I realize that we have a senior, the mayor's office of senior citizens, and they do teach classes. But we also have a workforce there that could be utilized possibly part-time. And there's quite a few women there, and it's just something to keep in mind when you think about hiring.
Yeah, that's a very good point. We're also working on the pipeline, you know, with our universities and our community colleges, so that we actually develop those women with the skills that will be hired, so that it just isn't a thing of them saying, well, there aren't any women.
Right.
It's going to take several strategies. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tell you, when you're down there and you're Amazon and Facebook, I mean, if they want to find a date, it's really hard.
Yes. Hi, I'm Jenny Boltman, and I'm with the Seattle Privacy Coalition. And I'm also a woman who works in tech. So I just wanted to thank both you and CTO Emma for all the work that you've done on highlighting privacy this year. And I also wanted to make a very strong pitch. I know that Michael is going to talk about this, but a very strong pitch for creating a chief privacy officer role in your administration, so that we have one single point of accountability, looking at privacy issues, looking at how information flows in the city, looking also at transparency issues. Privacy is a very cutting-edge issue, and it's great that Seattle is in such a leadership position on that for a tech hub, and I think this is a great area for us to lead, so thank you.
I appreciate that, and we are, because of the Washington state laws, we are so challenged in trying to manage privacy. The laws are good, and we will obey them. But in my opinion, they are far more on the side of almost total transparency, to the point that people are starting to talk to us about releasing emails in real time. So that the current filter that goes on when someone makes a public disclosure request, I have basically, since I've become mayor, I basically don't write emails. It inhibits my ability to be an effective leader. But it also takes a whole level of complication out of it. There is currently a request for every phone call I've made on my cell phone, my city cell phone. That includes, the cell phone numbers of my cabinet officers, of the police officers, of the parents I've contacted when their children have been killed in shootings in the city. Now, we haven't released it yet, but it is really, really over the top. I understand that you want to know who the mayor is calling, because what we want to be sure is that someone isn't using, like, my city phone for a campaign or make money on the side or something. I don't know where you'd find the time, but on the other hand, also protect information that really does not belong in the public. So we really, really struggle because of the state laws and the interpretation of them are so much broader than almost anywhere in America. So you make a really good point.
I understand that Hillary Clinton has a server.
Okay, we have time for a few more questions.
John Madaba, Filipino Community of Seattle. First of all, I wanted to thank CTAB. We were actually funded in 2013 with the Technology Matching Fund. In 2014, we were actually funded again to expand our program. So with those funds, we started a shoestring budget, and now we're sort of growing up. We're in our second year. We have grown from our community center to another community center, East African Community Services. We've actually been entering Bellevue School District, City of Kent, Seattle Public Library, Boys and Girls Club, and YMCA over the last year. So as an organization, we are going through ropes of learning on how to build STEM-based programming and art-based programming at a larger scale. And we've actually endeavored as a community to build a $20 million project that builds housing on our community center, about 70 units of housing, and an innovation learning center that I'm designing that is about $1.2 million. And we're figuring out that money doesn't come easy with that type of scale. So I'd like to know how we can partner with the city, because it is in the 98118 area code. We're trying to build a multicultural center that is providing not just the basic computing skills, but we're getting into certified drone programs, submersibles, wearables that kids can build and actually market on Etsy. And we actually have a makerspace that we built out at the same time. So the help that we need to go from a small program to a large program is advocacy. And I'm wondering how we can actually start to partner with a larger scale type of funding so that we can bring more programs like that to the city of Seattle.
So we should, I mean, folks here who work for the city and work for me should be in touch with you, and we should talk about how we take, what our involvement would be, or where else we might be able to assist you in finding help. That would be my recommendation.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone back here have a question for the mayor?
Well, I would ask, have we thought about, because I heard about support from the private sector, have we thought about other public sector ITs that are kind of leading in the region? Are we familiar with some that are doing well? And are we working together? Because I am a big firm believer in regional partnerships. I think King County talks about it a lot. I think we talk about it a lot, but I think there's a lot of silo. And so how have you guys talked about that? Do you have any plans on that front?
And can you tell us your name?
Nicole.
So I do keep in very close touch with my colleagues in King County. Bill Kehoe, and with Michael Cockrell, the CIO, and so we're in tremendous sync with their programs. Our leadership team here in the Department of Information Technology has regular syncs with Bill Kehoe's team, where we get together, we talk about what we're working on in this department. One of the things that we will be partnering on coming up in the next quarter is the joint vendor fair, where, as you can imagine here in the city, we do hear from a number of companies who have solutions that they can meet our needs or who want to work with us. But the challenge is how to communicate what we're struggling with and what we see the opportunities so that potential vendors can be successful. So Bill and I will be convening a group of vendors who are interested in working with us so that we can explain, you know, the upcoming year and our strategies and where we can partner. We are actually partnering with a number of IT groups from around the region, Sound Transit, King County, and the state, in our hackathon that's coming up next weekend. And I know Bruce is going to talk a little bit about that later, but I can't tell you how excited I am. For those who don't have anything to do for 48 hours starting next Friday at 5 p.m., we'll be at Moz with 100 developers, program managers, transit experts to help us envision what that next generation is of transportation apps and visualizations that help us commute more effectively. So I'm very excited to have all the great data and partnership for our regional agencies there.
Well, we want to thank the mayor for coming to talk to us. And I guess if someone has additional questions for today, how can they reach out to you?
So those folks who work for me, raise your hands. Contact them. And they will get it to me. Thank you so much for your time, and thanks for your work.
Thank you. Okay, we will take public comments now. Additional, if there's any that are not related to questions for the mayor. If there are none, okay.
Question for the mayor?
No, general questions for CTAB. Especially for any of the things on the agenda today. Oh, yes, and feel free to come in and grab a seat if you see any open.
Yeah, there's another seat back here also.
Okay, we're going to, if there are no public comments, we're going to move past the break. We'll move that later in the agenda, and we will approve the minutes from March.
February.
Is there a motion to approve?
We really approve the minutes.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved to second by Beryl. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Okay. Madam Chair?
Yes.
Could I take this opportunity to just commend the person who takes notes for us? We think she's been doing a fantastic job. And because we don't ever want you to be handicapped by technological breaks, any point, we thought we should have a backup, you know, for taking notes. So.
I have been set up.
Very
cool.
It's nice. Leather, too.
What does it do?
Yes, today is her birthday.
Oh, and happy birthday, too.
Is it your birthday, too?
Huh?
Is it your birthday, too? Are you
no,
saying?
No, I'm saying happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Cass.
Now watch me write a book.
That would be impressive.
That would be impressive. I can't do it. Thank you. That's sweet.
Okay, and we will now turn it over to the CTO to get his report.
Great. Thank you, Narisha, and thank you for those great questions from the mayor. I know that he really was looking forward to coming this evening, and hopefully that was valuable information. I'll keep my report short just because I know, looking down the agenda, a number of things that I would usually highlight are going to be presented by members of the DOIT department. So I actually took my first vacation last week since coming on board as CTO. Got away for 4 whole days. If you can't tell, this is more redness than tan. Try to go to Hawaii. It was a little rainy and cold. In fact, I think it was actually warmer in Seattle. But it was, actually, it struck me. Wherever I went on Maui, including up to the summit of, what's the volcano there?
Haleakala.
You get cell phone coverage. And you don't just get any cell phone coverage. You get LTE. And so naturally, I was doing a speed test everywhere. And at the top of the volcano, it got a little slower. It got like 11 megabits down. But, you know, at the hotel, we were getting 25 megabits wirelessly. From the airport, it was faster than that. So it really struck me how great the broadband was in Hawaii. And then to counter that, some of the places in Seattle where we don't have true broadband competition anymore now that the FCC has declared that 25 megabits down and 4 megabits up is the definition of broadband. In large parts of the city, you have your choice of fast broadband from Comcast or Wave, and then DSL from the phone company, which is as slow as 7 megabits in some parts of the city. So a couple of interesting things that came up recently in the news that I'm so proud of you know, CTAB for your work driving broadband in the city and then the work of our city departments around broadband. You may have seen that CenturyLink announced week before last that they have built out their fiber to the premise broadband, gigabit broadband service to 45,000 homes in Seattle, and that includes the neighborhoods of Ballard, West Seattle, and Beacon Hill in that initial phase that is now live. And I've seen several pictures, people are tweeting pictures, of CenturyLink trucks starting their build in what they're calling Green Lake, but Green Lake seems to stretch down into Ravenna based on what I'm hearing from folks, Del Ridge, and the Central District. They're also building in the Rainier Valley, and I'm trying to get some better clarification as to what specifically that means, but CenturyLink is very committed, both in what they've told us and what we've started to see action in terms of doing an equitable build of their broadband service here in Seattle, so that's great. I also had a chance to talk with Wave today, and they are signing up participants for their pilot fiber project in Eastlake. They have committed to build out to 3,000 homes as an initial pilot. This is the condo internet side of Wave, but they're calling the product Wave Jeep. So if you start to see that branding, it's the condo internet people who are doing the construction. So really exciting developments on broadband. Of course, I know everyone's very excited, as am I, about our municipal broadband study. Tony has been hard at work with our consultants from CTC Engineering, and that work is progressing on schedule, that by the end of April, we will have a report that tells us a few things. Number one, what is the city's ability to successfully deliver a retail broadband service? Number two, what is the cost to both build and operate a ubiquitous Wi-Fi service within the city? And then three, what might a pilot of a broadband service look like? So stay tuned. I know we're all very excited. I heard from some folks that you received some of our market surveys. We did send out, Tony, how many market surveys?
Residential, I think we sent out over 3,000, and about 850 people actually responded to them and mailed them back, which is fairly high success rate.
Yeah, so 3,000 households in Seattle received a market survey asking questions about what type of broadband service do you have at home today, you know, what price do you pay, how satisfied are you, would you buy a product from the city, how much would you be willing to pay, would you be willing to buy something from the city that didn't include a cable television service. And it is incredible. I mean, you figure for a survey of success is if you get 10% response, we have, well, very close to 30% response.
Mm-hmm.
So that was positive, and our consultants are crunching that data now. They're also in the midst of a small business survey with similar types of questions. So that's broadband. Half the commute. I won't go into it again. So excited for that. I'm sorry. I'll stop there then. But I think that we've put together a really tremendous weekend. And when I say we, I mean Bruce's team with Do It. Our hackathon manager, Candace Faber, who I know many of you know from Hack to End Homelessness last year, the Hack the CD, our partners in SDOT, Commute Seattle, and the approximate 15 corporate partners who have come in to help us, Microsoft, Amazon Web Services, Google, Anrix, Nutanix, Glimpse, Moz, and on down the list. It's really an impressive coalition, in addition to the regional governments who have partnered with us on data. Just a couple more things to recap. I know privacy, very excited that the City Council did pass our privacy principles ordinance a week before last. Thank you again to CTAB and to the Seattle Privacy Coalition for all of your efforts in this area. And again, this is just the first step. You know, we now have a framework by which the city can think about privacy. We've made commitments about the lens under which we'll make decisions. But next comes the privacy statement that actually documents more formally what our practices are and what departments need to live up to. The educational component, the privacy toolkit, which will tell departments and our staff, hey, here's the specific steps we want you to take when making privacy decisions and how to think about challenges that come up. As well as then that recommendation for what an ongoing privacy program looks like. So that would be, Jan, to your point, you know, when we think about, you know, do we have a position called Chief Privacy Officer? What are the responsibilities of that position? What is the staff that supports them? And so that's all part of the decision making that's coming up through our IDT within the city and our advisory committee, which meets again in April to start answering those questions. So moving right along on that front. I think one internal IT change that we made recently in the city for those who are interested in IT infrastructure, the council yesterday passed a change to the Seattle Municipal Code, which gives the Chief Technology Officer authority here in the city, and that change was empowering the CTO to sign off on data center contracts. This is a bit of minutia in the technical operation of government that we don't think a lot about, but we ran into a challenge with our next generation data center projects in January when we had successfully negotiated our first contract for the one city co-located data center facility, and we realized, well, this isn't a lease, this isn't a services agreement, so Seattle Municipal Code doesn't have an actual authority for someone to be able to sign this contract. New function for city government, you know, leasing data center space. And we now have that authority for the CTO to sign those contracts. So we were able to sign the NGDC contract, and going forward, we have a consistent process in the city for that type of purchase. Minutia, but it's exciting for us in this new capacity that we're building in the city.
Awesome. Does anyone have any questions for the CTO?
Deputy CTO?
Yes. For those who have friends or who otherwise might be interested, we did post this week two positions. First is a web developer position, and that would be on Jeff Beckstrom's team within our Web City web team. But also of high interest is our Deputy Chief Technology Officer position. For those who know Do It Well, that position has been vacant since I came on board last June, and it's a critical position in the department. We've spent really the last few months understanding the needs within the department and within city IT, and we've really come together around this vision for a deputy chief technology officer who is going to help the department of IT and help IT within the city develop the ability to talk with the departments on a business level. So actually having a leader who can say, you know, hey, SDOT, we're going to deliver you a server. We don't want that. We want someone who can help sit down at SDOT and say, we want to understand your strategic objectives. We want to understand where your business is going and how we help enable that with technology. Where we envision the deputy CTO is ultimately having a team of what those who are familiar with ITSM might call service delivery managers or business relationship managers. So those people who become our liaisons to the business and ensure the delivery of quality services. So that's something that we're going to stand up over time, but the deputy CTO will be that first step. So, if you're interested, it's posted on seattle.gov. If you know people who might be a good fit for the role and are looking for challenging new opportunities, please pass them on the link. And anyone who follows me on Twitter, I did tweet the URL I think yesterday or the day before. You can just retweet that.
In addition to posting it on seattle.gov, What kind of outreach are you making nationally to attract? I would think you'd go national to attract people of that.
Yeah, so there's two things that I know we have done for this position. But there's a government opportunity service that we share key opportunities through, and we've done that for this position. We also leverage services from LinkedIn to help us advertise the position to groups that would likely be a fit for it. So we are going that route. I will say that sometimes within the city, we do use professional recruiting firms to pursue positions. And in fact, last time we filled the deputy CTO role, we used a professional recruiter. We are not doing that this time. And the reason is we've had very good success recently filling key roles by posting the positions and using our own networks and working through our communities to generate interest. And I can share that this position was posted on Friday, and on Monday morning we already had 28 applications. So, granted, we haven't reviewed the fit of those individuals, but I can say that I think interest for this position is running quite high, which I am thankful for. Yeah.
So, with regards to the feasibility study on municipal broadband, the cable and broadband committee is eagerly looking forward to the results in April, and I'm just wondering, in anticipation of that being released. Is there any collaboration that you see with the Cable and Broadband Committee once those results are available to the public?
The short answer is yes, absolutely. You know, I don't know what the results of that are going to say or the feasibility, but what we do know from talking to other communities is making the decision to pursue municipal broadband is not flipping a light switch to say, yep, it's happening, here's the day your service gets turned on, write us a check. It really is a slog between the time that feasibility is determined, when a decision is made, and then ultimately when a build would begin. We talk about a community like Chattanooga, which I think we all look at as the bright and shining example of municipal broadband in this country. When Tony and I visited them in November, we heard from the moment they decided to build municipal broadband, they spent the next 2 years holding more than 600 community meetings to explain why it was important for the city to build community broadband, how it was going to happen, what the benefit is, answering questions about cost, and on down the list. Now, I think the world has changed slightly in the past 6 years since they made that decision to pursue community broadband, so it would be a slightly different conversation in Seattle, but we would absolutely be coming to the group to start thinking about, hey, potentially we see a path here. How do we start to craft that message? What does the process look like, and where would our touch points be? I do hope that when we have that initial conversation, that we have some inclination of the results, so we can have a point of view around, you know, here's where we think feasibility is. But actually, when's the next committee meeting?
It's going to be it's the last Monday of each month at Oasian Restaurant, and so that will be March.
March 30th. I'm blocking that on my calendar now.
Mm-hmm.
What time?
6:30 to 8:30.
Perfect.
For anybody that didn't get it, there's, you can grab it if you go out or something, or at the break, there's a list of the committees here, too, that has the times. And we have email lists for all the committees, and then most all of them, I think, have some other community volunteers on them.
Any more questions? Okay. So let's hear from Bruce about the commute.
Well, as Michael said, next weekend at Moz, we're doing the packed commute. This is, I think, might have pretty much gone through what it's all about, but finding innovative solutions using data from multiple sources, we're looking for, yes, we're looking for applications, we're looking for analysis, we're looking for maps, we're looking for whatever will help people get around Seattle easier, especially as the, as things remain chaotic in the streets for the next few years. And this has been sponsored by SDOT, co-sponsored by DOIT and the Office of Economic Development. And as Michael was saying, we have a whole bunch of, and Commute Seattle, not to leave them out, on the NGO side. A lot of great sponsors, sponsorship. Microsoft signed on as our main sponsor, which is great. You know, they are my experience with them has been that they are not a lot fast to do that most of the time. So, and we're really looking forward to it. So, the good news is that we have 103 people signed up, and that's almost at our capacity. So, if you are interested, or if anybody else you know is interested in actually participating, if you show up, we'll probably let you in just to watch them. But for actual participation, we could probably go another 10 developers and maybe another 5 project managers and designers, but that's going to be about it. Yeah.
That's a question. How much is it to enter? Is there a fee?
There is no entrance fee.
Okay.
There are also no prizes.
Well, there's a couple benefits in terms of what's in it for me. Clearly, the notoriety of being part of the hack. But Microsoft and Amazon and Google and some of our other sponsors will be providing free product to attendees. So Microsoft in particular has said, you know, we're going to give you free Azure compute and other resources. So if you build the next great app, it can run on Azure indefinitely until you start to, you know, turn it into a monetized program, in which case they'll want you to start paying for the product.
Okay. So is there any restrictions with any existing winners from other hackathons? We won the 2012 hackathon.
No.
Hackathon. So,
ECT,
so.
And if you wanted to even take that product that you won with and enhance it, that would be okay as well.
Yeah.
It's got to be about
transportation.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but there are no restrictions like that at all. As I say, if you're interested, want to get involved, go to hackthecommute.seattle.gov and get registered. The link is there. Because we're going to limit it, cut it off pretty hard at 120. So that's about as big as the space is.
And there is actually a price in the sense that at the conclusion of the hackathon on Sunday evening, we will have an initial judging round.
Mm-hmm.
And those teams, I think we're going to select 3 teams to move forward. And those 3 teams will be paired with mentoring with leading technologists from around the city, as well as leading transportation teams, with the expectation that they continue developing their app or their product.
Yeah.
And then they will be invited into City Hall for a championship round on April 29th that will be led or judged by Deputy Mayor Jonkis, SDOT Director Scott Coogley. We have a couple other people that haven't quite confirmed yet, but we're going to get some other cool technology judges to then pick the ultimate winner.
Okay, great.
So can people come?
Sorry.
So can people come just listen to the presentations of what was developed? Or?
Yes.
Once again,
the space is limited, so you know, I reserve the right to bar the door at some point.
And actually, we just got an interesting tidbit today. Bloomberg News is coming out from New York to be part of the hackathon and take the championship round on Sunday night. So we're very excited about that.
Question for Bruce.
Yes.
Is DPD one of the departments that's involved with this? And I asked that question because we are going through a 2035 planning process right now, and commute and transportation should be an integral part of it.
I do not think they are directly involved at this point. We certainly could ask.
Yeah.
Well, so the link with DPG is we're encouraging the use of data.seattle.gov, and they have a number of data sets out there, including permitting data and some of the other fact sets that they maintain. So those will certainly be available to the teams that purchase it.
And we've got data from Washington State, King County, and obviously SDOT. We also have private sector data from INRIC. We will have it from WalkShare, BikeShare. And that's, if you have any leads on transportation data, you know, send them to me or, you know, hack the computer and see how it goes.
Yeah, I was thinking not so much of the data, I assume it's going to be there, but of people from DPD who have this comprehensive view of the various elements in a comprehensive plan, of which transportation and commute is one of them.
I think, well, there's certainly people from SDOT that have that perspective,
okay.
But we can certainly look into it from DPD as well.
Good.
So I was just wondering also, like, what are some of the criteria for judging? I'm just wondering explicitly, I know you do a lot of work on this, you know, is there any equity issues? Like, are we looking at people that are, you know, lower income and things of that nature that built into that? I'm assuming it is, but...
Yes, it is. Yeah. Definitely. basically innovation, use, creative use of the data, and concentrating on plus advantage and populations.
I have a question too, just about the judges. Do they represent people that are both technical and non-technical?
Yes, I do. Especially, it's more technical in the first round, but in the second round, the judges that we have, this is a technical round. We may have one more that's a techie, but we're definitely looking for as much diversity as we can.
This is a question for Michael Cruz. It's clear there's been a lot more strategic thinking about how to actually execute a hackathon, not just for a one-time event, but also the counseling or the mentorship that goes to the next round in order for a much greater launch. Is this the kind of pattern we should expect moving forward in other city-run hackathons or events such as these, where even John mentioned that it's an opportunity for his initial idea to take it here or even a higher plateau to jump off of? Is that something that is actively being planned for the future?
I would love to see that. I've been involved with this about the fifth or sixth hackathon. And I like this model. We have to see, but I like this model a lot. I think there's some real advantages not to have prize money, actually, to have prize opportunities.
It's very improving.
And just a comment, when we launched our robotics company, we won the hackathon and launched the robotics company at the same time.
Yeah.
We then went to build platforms for kids using that. So there's a lot of ramifications with regards to not just the idea that you have at the hackathon, but the ideas that come after that, and then we're able to evolve along the line. So it's interesting how your idea may spark at the hackathon, but it evolves over time, many, many times over. So
one of the big pieces for my new title is Open Data Manager. One of the big pieces that I see is this is the first time anybody's taken try to put a catalog of any kind of subject matter data on a regional basis. And we'll start with transportation. Maybe it's public safety next. Maybe it's building and permitting next. You know, I'd really like to see some of those things happen.
And if I can just tack on, Bruce, one of the things that became very clear to us when we set out to do this hackathon is, number one, it was driven by a business need. SDOT came to us and said, we've got a problem with transportation. Do it, help us solve it. And we went, that's the community. Right? And a couple of things that evolved over the life of it is, number one, before we jumped into a solution or an event, we held a stakeholder meeting with corporations, with other government entities, and it was a tremendous knowledge-sharing event which helped shape the course. So we want to do more of that in partnering, because we do feel that is the right way for us and the city to work. I also can't say enough about Candace Faber. For those who know her, she has just been a huge asset. And something interesting has happened. We've gotten two calls from other departments saying, when's our hackathon? Where are you going to help us? It's like, well, we'll have to find that right sustainable model. But I think part of that first step is actually having an open data manager for the city, and what Bruce is going to do with his team to carry this type of work forward.
Yeah, I think we need a two hackathon per year limit. It is not a light lift.
Right. Yes. One last question
for Bruce. Is there any effort to bring in some of the people that you're talking about? You're talking about equity. You're talking about low-income and vulnerable populations. So. And not necessarily to be a part of the team, although I think it would be great if they were, but here are developers and these people who are typically not your low-income or vulnerable population representatives, and they're it's conjecture up to a point where they're trying to say, well, we think this is what those people need. And if we could just bring some of those people in to speak for themselves, they don't have to stay there for the 48 hours, mm-hmm. but perhaps they could come for an hour. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out as a suggestion.
I'd have to talk to Candace about that.
Yeah.
Whether she's, I know, put it this way, I know there were conversations along those lines. I'm not sure how much they came to fruition. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's a great
idea.
Yeah. I have two questions. I always love it when something is accessible out of the box. So that would be a fantasy, but I don't really have any. I watched a demo one time, a demo of an accessibility trainer. He's like, okay, the first thing a lot of developers do is they just turn off a bunch of accessibility features. And so I don't know that I have anything more insightful than that. I just want it to work. But I don't, I could probably apply some cracked accessibility testers. And the end to break things, if it's done badly, is really small sometimes.
I have a feeling the guy sitting next to me probably got the same
feeling. It's actually a really good point. We got a good piece of feedback, and it, if it's someone in this room, I'm not attributing you, I apologize, Shanna. We got a piece of feedback that said, hey, you should make a rule for the hackathon that any solution that gets developed needs to be multilingual and be accessible to Spanish users, since that's a major population in the city. Great idea. When we have 48 hours to get someone to write some code, it might be a little too much to also ask them to be a multilingual developer who's sitting there in 48 hours developing a solution. But point taken. Well, as we think about accessibility and, you know, certainly privacy being top of mind in the city, we are trying to educate developers about how to make their programs more accessible. And some of you may know Bethan Cantrell, who has been very active in privacy locally, who is a developer at Microsoft. And she's actually developed a presentation to help our civic hacking community consider privacy when they develop apps. And she's coming out on Friday to review that for us before it goes out to, I think, for Seattle and other organizations. So good feedback on accessibility, too.
Yeah, I think the other point I was going to make is Beryl's point about, I hear Commute Seattle having specific needs around the rush hour. When I think about one way to talk about vulnerable populations, just assuming that people, I was in a meeting once with some wonderful folks from Commute Seattle who they really had no concept that there are people who are completely dependent on the bus. And I know when I was bus commuting, sometimes if I had to change buses, I would shop or something at the transfer point. And so, but also just to think about how to move people around who only get around on the bus is a sort of, that opens people's eyes, just that alone sometimes.
Okay, we have time for one more comment or question.
Well, I was going to say from the research perspective, I'm a research scientist specialized in social media. You're talking about a participatory design process, where as you go through the actual development of the project, you engage the community to be active participants in that process. So it might be interesting to think about, you know, participatory design track to an hackathon.
Thank you. Hey, we're going to take a 5-minute break. Feel free to get water and snacks, and we'll convene in 5 minutes.
Thank you. You're my hero. I can see you both are. Yeah. So I can see why you read all the names I write in the transcription.
Why are we doing
this? Yeah, because I've been getting a lot of them. I mean,
also catching who the actual person is.
And that part I don't know.
Do that.